Thank you. Jacob is here with us. If you have technical questions, you can reach out to Jacob or me. So today we are
Everybody froze.
very fortunate.
Everybody froze. Why did that happen?
I think just hang
Can
tight.
anyone
You'll
hear me?
you'll come back. We can hear you. Yeah.
Okay, you froze. All right.
All right.
Can
Just
you guys all froze? Okay.
great.
Okay.
So today I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest, and I'm also going to let you know that she has received a bunch of questions in advance. When some people registered, they submitted questions. We'll also have time at the end for some additional questions. So it is my great pleasure to introduce Karen Kolodny. She is a longtime Jewish communal executive lawyer and is a member of the Reconstructing Judaism Board. From 2013 to 2022, Karen was the executive director and CEO of the Jewish Community Center of Mid-Westchester in Scarsdale, New York. She led the transformation of the JCC into a more established, financially sound, culturally relevant local institution during extremely challenging times. And prior to joining the JCC, Karen worked for 12 years at the 92nd Street Y in New York, serving as the director of the Milstein Rosenthal Center for Media and Technology, and then additionally as director of legal affairs. And at the same time, she was president of the board of West End Synagogue and president of the Heschel Parents Association and on the board of directors of the Heschel School. So, Karen, there's a longer bio, but I want to make sure to use the time wisely. And Karen has a lot to offer us today, and we're very grateful to have her here. So, I'm going to turn it over to Karen.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina. Nice to see all of you. Some of you I know, some of you I don't. I do have a presentation. It will be somewhat brief. I do have the questions. I'll go through those as well. As you heard from my bio, I have been both a lay leader and a professional leader of a Jewish organization. And the purpose of today's call is to think about your real estate as an asset. Too often people focus on, or no, I shouldn't say too often, but people focus on the programming, the clergy, the membership, and they don't think about, is my building the right building? Am I in the right place? My niece says she doesn't go to synagogue because the building's not egalitarian, it's old. So I want to just go through some options that you have on your real estate and look forward to a discussion at the end. I want to say something that I learned during COVID, that we're not all in the same boat. We're all in the same storm, but we're all in a different boat. Different people are going to have different issues. And the trick is to recognize that what I say here today is not for everybody, maybe for some of you, but you can learn from what other people are going through. So, with that said, whoops. Okay. Is your synagogue facing some of these issues? In other words, why are you on this call today? So I'm going to predict that maintaining buildings, prices are going up, mortgages are in place, and revenue may be coming down from membership. Older buildings have increased costs. Roof, when I ran the JCC, every time I went to UJA and they would offer me money for a program, I would say, but my roof leaks. Don't give me money for a program. I can't get people in my building. My roof leaks. Whether it's roof or no elevator or HVAC or plumbing or mold, older buildings have maintenance issues. And as we all know, membership and attendance in synagogues, in churches is declining. Sometimes it's not declining overall, but it's declining in person. And so people are participating in programs, but they're not doing it in person. So you've got a building that seats 360 people and you rarely get more than 75, but you still have to pay all the costs of the full building. So building a synagogue is not just a regular space. There's an emotional attachment to a synagogue. So it's not the same as, well, the shoe store is not working here, I'll just move it somewhere else. So one of the things to think about is, what's the attachment that your synagogue has to its space? Some synagogues are very building-centric. All the programs take place in the building. Everybody loves the architecture. Everybody loves the location. The building is the focal point. Some synagogues are program-centric. which means you plan your programs and you plan them wherever they are, but people will go. If it's XYZ synagogue planning a program at the mall, at the baseball field, they'll go. Doesn't matter. Other synagogues are very much clergy driven. Whatever the rabbi does, I'll do. Stop and think about what your synagogue is like before you think just about the real estate in a vacuum, because you're looking at the real estate with the emotional attachment to it as well. And I want to leave space and time to recognize that these buildings have a lot of memories attached to them. 18, 20, 50 years of building, and you can't just throw it away. So this is a conversation about real estate. I recognize and I hold space for the fact that this is an emotional conversation as well. So I'm going to predict that most of you have wills. Most of you have insurance policies. Most of you have thought about your legacies, and you've thought about it before it was too late. You didn't wake up on your 80th birthday and say, I think it's time to make a will. You're doing the planning as you live your life. Well, a synagogue is no different. You have to plan as you go through a process, and you can either kick the can down the road, or you can plan. And clearly, I'm in the mode of planning. I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I'm going to give a lot of thoughts. You can't plan all of it right away, but the fact that you're on this call means that you're thinking about planning. What can I do? How should I do it? So, the first thing I will say is, planning takes time, and planning is a process, and it requires the right people to do it. So, if your rabbi is about to leave, not sure you should be doing a long-term plan. If there's upheaval on the board, maybe not the time, or maybe it is the time to think about planning, but getting the right people on the board. And any plan you make should be simple and should be clear. Whether you're going to rent out your building, whether you're going to sell your building, whether you're going to merge with another organization, you need to be very clear on your action steps, and you need to have very clear outcomes and quantifiable metrics. If we get X, we will do Y. If we don't get X, we won't do Y. And remember that you're going to need patience because it's a long planning process. Everybody with me so far? Okay. First thing is, you must do financial models over and over and over again. The rule of thumb in the nonprofit world is that a nonprofit should have 3 to 6 months of money, of operating money in the bank. Most of us don't. Let's be clear, most of us don't. That's the rule of thumb, but it doesn't often happen, at least not for smaller nonprofits. But if you see that over the past few years, you've always had 1 month or 1.5 months, and now you don't have any, well, then maybe you really should start to think about what's the next step. Don't wait till it's too late. Start doing financial models early and often. You might need to get your treasurer. You might need to hire a temporary CFO. This work is important, and it is vital to any decision you're going to make, because your model, and you're going to have to keep changing your models. What does it cost me to stay in the building? Can I save money? What extra revenue can I earn if I decide to rent out my building? How much more do I need? Before I'm going to rent out my building, how much more do I need in order to stay in the building? Okay, I need $100 more a month. That tells you who your tenant might be. If you need $100 more a month, you're not going to go to a babysitting class. You may go to something that provide, I'm using numbers obviously, but you're going to go to a babysitting class that only will pay you $2 a month. You need to figure out what you need to stay in your building and then match that with what you think could be your additional revenue. That will also help you figure out who your tenants could be. Do your market research. What are other people paying to rent out buildings? Add that into your model. Could you undercut other people? What does that do? What expenses do you need to attract tenants? Remember, you may have extra expenses in painting and marketing and maintenance. If you plan to sell, what do you need in the way of space? If you plan to purchase somewhere else, factor in insurance rates. So there's just a lot of research and analytics that you need to do in any decision, and you need to start doing these early, and you need to do quite a few of them over time in order to come up with the right decision for what's the right thing for you financially. Now, Whoops, hold on. So these are the options I'm going to discuss. I'm going to go through each of these briefly, and then I'll answer some of the questions that were given to me, and then we'll have a discussion. So the question that was asked of me the most in the questions that were sent ahead is, I want to stay in my building, but I want to increase my revenue. How do I get more tenants? Somebody asked. What's the process? So I will tell you that you're not the only one who's thinking this way. One of the things that a church did where I live is they put an ad in the local nonprofit listserv. And they said that they have facilities available for affordable rental rates. I'm reading from their ad. We are known for hosting blood drives, AA, Weight Watchers, right? Those are all one-off rentals that don't bring in a lot of money. We'd like to see our building yard and parking lot used more. So they are doing a broader reach for more active use of their building and their parking lot. And so they're inviting the community to come and look at their space. So if you want to stay in your building and increase your revenue, you have to advertise it. You can advertise it through listservs. You can hire, I mean, you have to make this somebody's responsibility. You have to hire, whether it's a student or a somebody's child or a college student, you have to dial for dollars or text for dollars, as the case may be. You need to let people around you know that you are available to be rented out. And you need to analyze your own building's usage. So I'm going to tell you what we did at the JCC. We had a large building that wasn't being used. So we rented out office space. We moved some people's offices so that somebody had an office space. It was a person who worked in the Jewish community. She generally worked from home, but wanted to come in once in a while. We rented her an office. We had to get her own internet connection because her office required that. We had some costs involved, but we gave her an office and we required other people to share in order to bring in that extra revenue. We also rented out communal space. As I say, we rented it out to Red Cross for babysitting courses, or we rented out to BBYO, which took every Tuesday night all the classrooms. There are a list of different people who might want to share your space, just as a rental, not as a shared program, but just as a rental. And we can go through a little bit more detail about that later in the question and answer. But remember that you may have to compromise on your own needs. You may have to move people. Tuesday nights when BBYO was there was a mess. So we had to hire extra security on Tuesday nights. But that was the only way we could bring in the rental. We were contacted by movie companies to use our building. We rented out our parking lot for a local golf tournament. I mentioned this to Tressa and she laughed, but circus schools need high ceilings. They may want to use your building for circus schools. You may have therapists who want to just have a quiet place to meet with physical, not really physical therapists, but occupational therapists or social workers may just need a room where people can come to. So there are all kinds of options of what you might do, and there are different ways of reaching out to people. But you need to think about your building differently. You need to compromise. You can also do some shared revenue, shared programming with shared revenue. So we worked with a local nonprofit educational program. We brought in speakers, we co-marketed it, and then we shared the revenue with them. So just different ways to bring in more revenue. I'm going to talk about taxes. I'm going to talk about it now, and then I'm going to talk about it later. Some of your income may be taxable, so just keep track of it when you are renting to or when you are renting to another organization. Now, somebody asked me what to put into a contract if they're leasing from a church. So, or if you're leasing to a church, or if you're leasing to another synagogue. So, different states are different, but it's not all states allow a religious organization to rent to another organization that is not consistent with its mission. So sometimes you have to check the local law, but you also have to check the bylaws. So if the church is as a very narrow mission, It may not be able to rent to you. And you want to find the land. Now, they may not want to share their bylaws with you, which is fair. Then you need to say to them, okay, I just need to know that you have the authority within your bylaws to rent to me. And the same thing, if somebody asks you for your bylaws, you may want to do the same. And if you're thinking that you may want to start renting, you may take a look at your bylaws and make sure your bylaws are broad enough to allow you to bring to rent to another nonprofit. You want to make sure that you're consistent with the mission of that organization. I'm using the word example of a church, but if you rent from a church and they don't allow same-sex marriages and you want to have a same-sex marriage, you may not be allowed to. So you want to check their rental policy, and you also want to create your own rental policy to see what you might want to allow people to do. Clearly, both parties are going to need insurance. If you're renting to or from someone, you're going to want to talk about security. Some churches I read don't want to offer security to the synagogues. You have to figure out who's going to pay for that. You may want really broad signage saying this synagogue is at this church, or you may not want a lot of signage. Who pays for the signage? Who pays for the extra cleaning up on the parking lot on the Saturday, because they normally don't clear snow on Saturday because they normally don't use it on Saturday. There's lots of these different issues to think about. Storage. Is your synagogue going to allow you to keep the Torah in the church all week? Do you have to bring it back? These are all things to think about. And again, as I said, taxes are important. You want to make sure that if there's an unrelated business income tax, which is called UBIT, you may have to pay tax on revenue you earn from renting to a non something that's not consistent with your mission. But if you are the tenant somewhere, you want to make sure that you're not paying that a landlord is paying that. Then we get to the question of, should you sell your building? How am I doing on pace? Am I doing okay? Everybody okay? All right. Then you get to the question of selling your building. Should you sell your building? Lots of issues. So just because this is a group of synagogues, I did some rabbinic research. According to Mishnah and Talmud, and of course, it has a vote, not a veto. You should not sell your synagogue unless there's another place for your community to pray, probably available in your community. And the concept behind it was that if you're going to sell your synagogue, at least there was somewhere else to go for either the people in the town or people who were visiting. There is also a view that you cannot use the proceeds from a synagogue unless you're going to use it for a higher purpose. So you can't sell a synagogue. Again, you could take these rulings and take them for what they're worth. You can't sell a synagogue and then go and buy a car. The value of the property has to be used for at least a higher degree of holiness, which may mean an endowment for community needs, or it may mean a Torah, or it may mean an endowment for education. But you should be just mindful that the proceeds should be thoughtfully, you should think about the proceeds before you sell your synagogue. And we'll talk about that in a minute too. I also don't know how many of you realize that before you sell a nonprofit building, the Attorney General, I'm using New York because that's what I'm familiar with, but the New York State Attorney General has to approve any major real estate transaction if it consists of a certain percentage of the assets of the nonprofit, which I assume that in everybody's case, it would be this is one of their largest, if not their largest asset. So if you decide to sell, you can't just sell tomorrow. There's a whole process of going through the Attorney General. You have to do your homework before you sell. And you probably should do your homework even if you're not selling, but you should probably do your homework before you sell. Make sure you have title to your property. You'd be surprised how people find out at the last minute they didn't have title to their property, or that there's a restriction on the title, meaning that a donor 100 years ago said, you can own this, I'm giving you this money, you can buy this house, building, but if you ever decide to sell XYZ. So you have to start looking at your title. You have to look at your government websites to see if you have any violations. You won't be able to sell a building with violations. You're going to need to make sure all your permits in place. You probably should have a C of O. I've spoken to one synagogue who is now getting their C of O because they don't have it and they're trying to sell. These are all the things you need to think about. And I'm going quickly through these just to give you a sense of some of the issues. You have to check the zoning. Not you may be zoned as only a nonprofit, so how does that affect where you sell? Before you even think of selling, you should get an appraisal so you get a sense of what the value is worth. There are different methods of appraisal. There's an income method, what could the property earn? There's a cost method, what would it cost someone to build it? And there's comparables. Probably the best thing is to get someone to give you the highest and best use of your land based on the zoning. That gives you a more accurate sense. The other methods are historic. This is if somebody shows up today, what would they buy it for? You need to check your bylaws. Who is allowed to make these decisions? Does the whole community have to vote if you want to sell? Is it the building committee? Is it the executive committee? So you need to really understand your own internal documents before you try to go out and sell. Got to make sure there's no prepayment penalty on your mortgage. And as I said before, you need to think about your proceeds. And this is important because you clearly want to pay off your mortgage. What are you going to do about staff severance? Are you going to provide a severance to staff because you may be closing or you may be moving too far for staff? You have to make sure you create an endowment if you have a cemetery, because if your building costs and your synagogue were paying for the cemetery, and you don't have the building anymore, you need some costs if you're part of a cemetery. Probably doesn't apply to people in this room, but maybe it does. Are you part of a communal eruv? And where your building, if you sold your building, do you have to make that as part of the condition of selling? Lots of things to think about before you sell, but just gives you an idea of, you know, what to be looking for. And then someone said they're renting, should they buy? Well, you have to be realistic about that. Can you afford to buy? If your shul has grown recently and you expect further growth, or if it shrunk and you don't know how much more it's going to shrink, lease for a while longer to have a better sense of the growth. If you've been stable and you really think this stable is where you're going to be, then it's a good time to look. But make sure you have a clergy contract in place. You don't want to be stable. Your rabbi's really proud of how stable you've become. Rabbi moves on, and then you've got to start looking for a clergy at the same time as looking for space. And then also depends what's your rent, what's your projected mortgage rate. Mortgage rates are very high right now. If you're renting at a low rate, you may not be able to duplicate that with a mortgage. So think about that. You could also think about sharing space with another organization. So we had a synagogue share space with us at the JCC, and that works. You have to think about if you're sharing with an organization that has similar values to you, or are they very different? And if they're very different, that may be easier. May not have to compromise anything. You're just sharing space. Nobody gets in anybody's way. And then once you're sharing space, you can think about other things like, should we do programs together? Should we do a summer camp together? But co-locating is kind of the first step of those kinds of conversations. And then that leads to a merger. And that is a much more complicated process that will take time. You don't have to merge with another Reconstructionist synagogue. You can merge with a Reform, Conservative. Again, depends on your community. Remember, we're all in the same storm. We're not all in the same boat. And there's a lot of work that goes into merging, and it takes time. You need a real strong board and a coalition of leaders, and you need to think of everything. So synagogue in, well, I won't tell you where, a synagogue that merged. Things were took a while. It took a few years. And now the host synagogue where they moved to does not want to allow the synagogue that moved in there to put their Yahrzeit plaques on the walls. And it's becoming a big crisis in the synagogue. I thought we merged. I thought we're one. Yeah, but these are your Yahrzeit plaques. These are your past presidents. They're not ours. Believe it or not, this is what they were fighting over. So think about that as well. You really have to make sure you have the right people doing any of this work. You need a committee. You need a real champion of any kind of major real estate transaction. The clergy will have to be on board. They'll have to mediate. They'll have to facilitate discussions. Same thing with the executive director. And you're going to need advisors, and your advisors are going to be a legal team, a real estate team. You may need a social worker. You may need a communications expert, but you can't do this alone. You may need strategic planning consultants. You really do need to think of who is your team, any of the decisions we talked about just now, who is your team, And how are you going to make these decisions acceptable to everybody else and really manage the whole process? Because remember, I started with saying that this is an emotional conversation. I just got off a 2-hour board meeting, and all the people complained about was the lack of communication. No communication. Just like it, you need to make it someone's responsibility to find tenants. You need to make sure that someone is making responsibility for communication. Every minute, every meeting should have minutes. Every meeting should have, even if it's short, what was discussed, what was decided, who was there, who on the committee was not there. Because you may see that Tom, Dick, and Harry were there, but you don't realize that, Jane, who was the major funder, was not there. Who was at the meeting? Who wasn't at the meeting? What was discussed? What was resolved? Any of these conversations are going to require that. And now, just to remind you that your synagogue building may be the best thing that happened to you, or it may be hampering a greater impact on the community. Your building may be what you should think of next when you're thinking of how to revitalize your synagogue, and that you have options. You have options to rent, to share space, to move. So those are some of the things I wanted to discuss. Now I will stop sharing my screen. Have I lost anybody? Everybody? And then I want to just answer some of the questions that some people have asked me previously, and then I'll look at the chat questions. So there were some financial questions that came up. At what financial point do we take steps to dissolve and sell? Well, first of all, dissolving and selling are two different concepts. You don't dissolve your 501c3 until the very, very end, and the Attorney General has to give you permission to do that. What you can do is start to look at selling, and we talked about that. It's going to depend on how much cash you have, what your projected income is, what's the condition of your building. But at what point, if you're asking the question, at what point should we think of selling? You're at the point now where you should think about what we should be doing with our real estate. Someone asked, how do we refinance a building loan? Similar to refinancing any kind of loan, because you're a nonprofit and you want to make sure you have transparency, I suggest you get multiple bids. I suggest you get a very clear bid sheet so that everybody is bidding on the same thing. You might have more luck with a local bank than with a national bank because some local banks have a better reputation for lending in nonprofits. But it's just like getting a refinancing. Again, now is maybe not the time to be refinancing just because the mortgage rates are so high. Someone asked, how do we make a decision to stay or go? Some of the things I've just talked about, there's a lot to analyze before you can make that decision. Is there any available benchmark about the percentage of synagogue annual budget that should be spent on building-related costs? There isn't, because it depends. It depends on the size of your community, on the clergy salary, on your mortgage rate, on the size of your building. So there is no benchmark. The best you can do is call around to other synagogues and churches and see what churches have a different model of budgeting. But you can look around. Generally speaking, 30% should be operations and programs, but that doesn't answer the question. What do I mean by operations? What do I mean by programs? So I think you really have to look at each case separately to answer that question. We have a balloon payment coming due in 3 years. Should we pay it off now or seek a new loan? Now's no time to pay off. Now's no time to get a mortgage. I sent back an email to the person who asked this question. How are you going to fundraise for the balloon payment? What's your current source of revenue? Why are you wanting to pay it off now? So there's some other questions that need to be answered before you can just answer, should we pay off a balloon payment? But right now, again, if your interest rates are low, don't do anything. We're looking at moving. How do we navigate the time gap between property and selling or finding a place and selling? You need a committee to be looking at every different aspect of this and just make it work. You may have to pay rent an extra couple months. You may have to be without a place for a couple of months. But you have to find the right place to move to that will be acceptable. You have to put your, do everything I said before about putting your building up for sale. So there is no right answer, but finding a place and selling your place don't happen necessarily at the same time. There may be overlap. Someone asked about a sell and lease back. possible to do a sale leaseback. Probably a developer is, there's a tax issue because you're a nonprofit. You have nonprofit status. If you're selling to a developer, then there's property tax. So I don't know enough about what that question was asking, but a sale leaseback is possible. But there are other things to think about. I think that answered most of the questions. Should I read these or do you want to read them or should I just go through the
I think I can
synthesize some of them?
I think I can synthesize them. So there was a question about a situation where they have a social hall and they have a kosher social hall. How do they maintain that while renting out their space? And there was a couple of ideas floated, but would love to hear from you as well.
And what were the ideas floated?
Well, that if you have clear policies that are made clear to the renters that it can be done. Someone said that they rented from a conservative congregation and they just keep everything dairy vegetarian. And if they go near the kitchen, they abide by all of their rules. Maybe there's supervision involved in that as well. So just curious if you have any other insights
Yeah.
into the
You have to be respectful of kosher rules. And so what we did is we didn't allow anybody into the kitchen. And if they brought in food, it could not come into the kitchen. It again, everybody's different. We allowed non-kosher food, meaning not complete treif, but we allowed pizza from any place, vegetarian pizza from any place to come in, but not go through the kitchen. It had to go directly to the social hall. We also had somebody come in and kosher the kitchen once because somebody needed it more kosher. It is an issue that needs to be discussed regardless of who you're renting to or from, and you have to understand expectations. Happiness is related to expectations and reality.
Another question was that if we rent space to a for-profit tenant, do we risk losing our real estate tax exemption?
Depends on the state. You need to research it. It depends how much you're renting. If it's an insignificant amount, no. If it's a significant amount of space and time, potentially, yes. So again, if you're renting it to a driver's ed program for 2 hours on a Tuesday, probably not. If you are renting out your entire building for a long period of time, potentially, and different states are more liberal with what they'll allow religious organizations or nonprofits to do. So, again, we rented out our building to a movie company. We made thousands of dollars, but it was only 2 weeks. So the answer is no. So I hate to say it, but it depends on the nature of the transaction.
I did not see any other questions in the chat, but we have plenty of time. So if people have questions, even if it's about your very specific situation, you're invited to ask them. We can all learn from each other, even if it's not something that we're going through right at the moment. So
Can I
any,
ask a
go ahead.
so I was the person that asked the question about refinancing the mortgage. I'm a realtor, so I know a good bit about the interest rates right now. We are now on a variable rate and it is insanely high. We could get several points lower if we refinanced, I believe. But what I'm not clear on is what kind of loan it is. My main lender told me it wasn't a residential loan. We'd have to go to a commercial lender. And I said, but we're not commercial, we're nonprofit. So do you know what kind of mortgage we would need to look at?
When we mortgaged at the JCC, we went to our bank and they knew we were a nonprofit. We fit somewhere between there. We were not in the residential department. We were in the commercial department subsection, nonprofit. So the smaller banks do have nonprofit. This was in Westchester. So there are lots of nonprofits, there are lots of small banks, and that's who we went through. So we were in the commercial, again, repeating myself, in the commercial department in the nonprofit section.
Thank you. Very helpful. Thank you.
I don't know if your bank offers that, but it's clearly not a residential loan. Your risk is different than a residential loan.
Thank you.
Mark, go ahead, and then Lori.
Hi, Mark Bregman, University Synagogue in Irvine, California. Have you seen any unusual or creative deals. For example, we have a huge chunk of equity in our building. We can't borrow any more against it because we wouldn't have sufficient cash flow for the coverage. So we can't take an equity loan on top of our current loan. But what about, let's say, giving a let's say there's a church that wants to buy our building for future. Could we sell them an option? Could we sell them the building and lease it back for a certain period of time into the years? Has seen any unusual deals like that at all in your experience?
Yes, you can. Again, every state is different. So, and I'm not going to opine on California real estate law. It is possible to do the kind of transaction you've described. there's some issues in terms of will your community want you? So there's the legal issue. Then there's the will your community want you to sell to a church and lease back? And for how long? How reliable is that church in terms of its own existence? but there's nothing prohibiting, generally speaking, the sale leaseback. I think it's much more specific to the individual. You know, what's the advantage to you to doing it? What's the short term and the long term advantage? I understand the short term. What's the long term advantage? If the value of the real estate's going to go up, you're losing out on that long term gain. You know, you might. So you might sell a portion of the land. I don't know. There's different ways to look at it, but I don't see a reason why you can't have a sale leaseback.
Great,
Hi, my
thanks.
name is Laurie Devery from Havarah Shalom in Portland, Oregon. So I was the one who asked the question about the gap between the purchase of a building and the sale of a building. And specifically, our situation is we are deciding between, we're sort of in a love it or list it. Do we want to expand our current building? Or do we want to explore purchasing another building? And there's actually a church that we're going to be looking at today that looks very promising in terms of location and features and so on. But I'm already spinning through, well, what if we really like it? You know, we don't have a fundraising, we don't have capital in place to purchase it. We don't have members lined up saying we will pledge so much if this is what we do. Is there, how do we get between, yes, we want it, but it's probably going to take us 6+ months to sell our building, and it's probably not going to be on the market in 6 months. I mean, that's sort of my question is, how do we finance that gap, or how do we even think about it?
Well, the church may not have any other buyers. You may be the perfect buyer. You may put a give the church what we would call either earnest money or a down payment and say, listen, we really want to buy this, but we're not ready to pay for it yet. But we will. So they may be cooperative. You may be able to offer them something in your building while it's being sold. I don't know what, but they want to use your space for free while it's being sold. It may be something you can do. It's going to take time for them to get approval and for you to get approval to sell your buildings. So it's going to be more than 6 months. So you need to think about maybe you rent somewhere else, maybe you share space, maybe you alternate. I mean, it sounds silly, but alternate between your building and their building so people get a sense of both of them. It's 6 months, I think, is too short to think about this process. If you really want that church and they really want to sell it to you, they're not the same as selling to a car dealership. They're going to really want you there as opposed to someone else. They may work with you on it. I thought you were asking about the moving costs. I didn't
Right,
quite load
no, I
the
realize
question.
I haven't told
Right. So you walk in there and you say, we really want this building. How much do you want for it? Well, we can't afford it, but let's think about it. But don't show it. You may have to pay an option. We're going to give you X dollars as an option.
There we go.
Again, make sure your bylaws allow you to do that. We're
Right.
going to pay X dollars as an option on the building. Give us 6 months until we figure this out. Can you help us figure this out? What have you done for financing?
And they're, by the way, it's an empty building, so they're gone. And it's not like they're a functioning congregation anymore.
May I ask what denomination it is? Because do they have to get, no, I don't need to know. Do they have to get approval from high, churches are different than synagogues.
Yeah, I
Churches
don't
generally
know.
have
This
to
is
get
what.
approval from the higher ups before they can sell.
Yeah, I have no idea. So
Right.
I'll ask that today when we go through our tour.
Yeah, you really want this building. How do you secure it? Again, you can't say you really want the building until your board approves it, but you really think you want the building. How do we secure it? We need time to figure this out. Work with us on it.
Okay, good advice. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm going to take Ralph's question in a moment, but we have something from the chat from Steve. We think we have a deed restriction on whom we can sell to. Can you recommend a real estate lawyer to review it?
What city, state?
Steve, you want to tell us where you are?
Yes, we're in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. It's a suburb of Philadelphia.
Tressa, you may have a better sense from Pennsylvania. Someone, you know, on the college may know of a real estate lawyer. You probably, if you have a restriction, you have to have it looked at. I don't know a Pennsylvania lawyer that could help you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But if you ask around other people in your community, either people on your board or nonprofit, again, some of these conversations are maybe confidential and you may not want people to know, but you will find a local attorney who can do this. Is there a Jewish school in your neighborhood? They probably, if they bought their real estate, they will have a real estate lawyer that worked with them on it.
Well, the reconstructing Judaism Rabbinical College is actually in our neighborhood.
There you go.
Steve, I'm going to say, this is Tressa. I'm at Reconstructing Judaism. I'll talk to the folks here and see if there's somebody who they can recommend. I don't know off the top of my head, but I'll ask.
Okay. Yeah, we had a congregational meeting and I was tasked with getting a real estate lawyer to take a look at that because there's been this understanding for 40 years that we can't sell to anybody other than another religious institution. And I can't find anything in writing that says that, but somebody of a higher authority has to look at it.
That's what I said before about checking municipal documents and checking internal documents. That's exactly
yep.
right. You think yep. you can sell, and at the last minute you find out you can't. So
right.
good, better to check it now.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Have you checked the city, the municipal records? Have you checked the title?
I have not. I've had some commercial real estate people look at it and they say that they can't find anything that's recorded. And that even if it went to court because of a recent decision on an art museum called the Barnes Foundation, that sold their building actually to an Episcopal Academy, they feel that it's not upholdable in court. But, you know, we don't want to get into a court situation.
Right.
Thank you, Steve. Ralph,
you.
Please go ahead. Ralph.
Hi, I'm Ralph. I'm from Shir Hadash in Wheeling, Illinois. And our president was actually the person who asked about the refinance or the fundraising to pay off our mortgage. They keep writing these with 5-year balloons. We have a current fixed rate of 4.1%, which is a bargain. And we're very concerned that 3 years hence, we're not going to get anywhere near that. And also there in our vicinity, there was another synagogue whose bank had balloon due, and their bank chose not to renew it. And we just don't want to, the things that's driving this, besides the change in interest rates, is the fear that we won't be able to refinance, and that'll drive us scrambling to find a replacement lender at, you know, and we won't be in the driver's seat in terms of the negotiation.
Yes. So it's a good thing you're looking at it now. There's no way anyone can predict what interest rates will be at in 3 years. If you're capable of selling it off, if you're capable of paying it off now, great. But I wouldn't pay it off unless you could raise the money to pay it off and not affect overall operations. So you're doing a capital campaign. One of the questions I asked was, can you partially pay it off, or is it a full, you have to pay off the whole amount?
There's no prepayment penalty, so we could actually make a partial prepayment too. There's a point though where the dollar amount of the mortgage would be so small that I think the bank may find it would be administratively unfriendly to them to have such a small mortgage. I mean, it's a nice problem to have, but for it to be such a small mortgage in terms of, you know, the property appraises out at many times the amount of the mortgage. So they may think, believe it or not, it could be too small for them.
Yeah, it may not be too small for another bank. I guess, again, if you can raise the money to pay it off, but I wouldn't rush to pay off a 4.5%. But the other thing you could do is just start collecting the money.
Sorry, I might have misspoke. Our plan would not be to pay it off until the balloon became due. We would keep it at the 4.1. And then if they did offer us a renewal, if it was at an unacceptable rate, we would pay it off.
I got it. So you're collecting the money now and you're putting
it. We have a 3-year window to fundraise enough money to pay it off when it's due in January of 2027.
Yeah. And tell people that if they give it to you sooner, you'll invest it at 6 or 7%. And so what the amount that they're giving you is actually worth more in present dollars if they give it to you now.
It's a good point. It's a very good point. Thank you.
Banks don't like to foreclose on religious institutions.
That's right. Why we were surprised when this happened to our sister institution. And we were very disappointed that the bank would do that, because from their perspective, from a public relations standpoint, it does, the optics are terrible.
Yep, it happens. A C of O is not a certificate of ownership. It's a certificate of occupancy.
Yeah, you
got that. Okay. All right. Sorry. That. Yeah.
If I missed anyone's question in the chat, please raise your hand or unmute yourself and speak up. If anyone has any other questions, please unmute and ask your questions. We do have a few more minutes.
Yeah, I'm curious. I have a question. Oh, sorry, is someone speaking?
Yeah, go ahead and I'll call on Sherry next.
I'm curious, maybe Tressa, you know this, what percentage of congregations own their building versus rent their building?
I do not know that off the top of my head. It is certainly something that we can figure out. We also have plenty of congregations who rent from others. So there's a mix of what our different congregations do. I'm happy to look that up for you, Susan.
You don't have to research it. I was just curious if you had a sense.
I started to look at that. I started to go through each of the people who were on the call or who had registered and to see what the status was by looking at their websites. I would say, and I'm venturing to say, Susan, and I shouldn't probably say this, that more rent from another organization than you would find in a Reform synagogue or conservative synagogue. Mm-hmm. And I say that because of the nature of Reconstruction synagogues being either newer entities or smaller. My sense is there was a higher proportion of people who were renting than owning. But that's a little bit intuitive, not based on fact.
Thanks, Karen.
I think it really depends on when the congregation was founded. Some of our newer, some of our older congregations had buildings because that was the thing that people did at that. At that era, some of our smaller congregations are better served by using the space in other buildings.
Right. And before Joanne asked her question, I have told people that I know who are looking to either expand or are involved in nonprofits not to buy their real estate. And you can see from my presentation, my concerns about real estate, that it could be in the wrong place. They become very expensive to maintain. And membership dues are congregational membership and engagement is on the decrease. So if you take increased costs and decreased revenue, I advise not to. But other people disagree.
And there are many buildings, as you've been discussing, many available buildings from other institutions that have closed, right? So there's more empty real estate, I think, in many places that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. John, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're in the fortunate position, as you know, Karen, of owning our building. We don't have a mortgage, but we just invested even more money than what we paid for the synagogue to install an elevator. And as you say, membership is down. So we have an incremental loss in terms of our operating expenses. I think from what you've said, you need to bring together people with certain expertise and the stakeholders. Do you find that that's something that can be done with the people who are members, or do you think we should expect to go outside to get consultant or consultants to help us go through the process of finding tenants? We don't want to sell the building. We need to find tenants, and we're doing a very ad hoc, random approach now. And I fear for its not being successful unless we organize a really concerted effort.
I don't know about hiring an outside consultant as opposed to hiring a part-time employee or part-time person, not on your, you know, an independent contractor, to really scour the neighborhood and see who's renting to whom, what's available, what do people want, and what are you willing to, again, what's your shortfall, and what are you willing to compromise? Are you willing to rent it out? I mean, I know a little bit about your story. So are you willing to rent it out every day of the week for X amount of time, in such a way that they don't have to move the furniture every weekend? So you need to figure out what you're willing to do. I really think an employee who calls all the businesses around you or does some research, I don't think real estate agents necessarily are the right way to go. My own opinion is they're going to want someone who is either going to rent a mall, or they're going to want someone who's going to rent an office building. And you are, as they say, sui generis. You're different. You're not. And there are not real estate. There's a real estate agent in New York who I know who deals with the sale of nonprofits, but he deals with major sales. I don't know that you're going to find an agent. I think you want an entrepreneur who's going to roll up their sleeves and just look around.
Right.
You were lucky with a tenant that you had. And so your bar is high because you had a very good tenant for a few years. It's going to take work, especially as Tressa said, there's lots of available space now.
Thanks.
Anyone want to have a final question or share something that worked, that is working for you in this area?
So we decided at Neir Shalom about a year ago that we had an artist in one of our spaces, and we decided we wanted to monetize that. And we found a daycare center.
Oh, she's very nice.
They've been a great tenant because they use the space during the week. We generate revenue from them. So that was a really good move on our part. And we did it mostly by word of mouth, you know, getting the word out to people that we had space that we wanted to rent. We got a sense of comparables on what we should charge from talking to a real estate agent.
Thank you. Stuart, go ahead.
In a similar vein, I just wanted to point out that we have two tenants in our building. One is CJE, the Council for Jewish Elderly, and we give them an office that they use because they lost their last one. And the second one is an a cappella woman's chorus that practices in our facility on Wednesday evenings. And between the two of them, we're generating $2,000 a month in income. So we're very pretty happy about that.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Hi, my name is James Goldman. I'm with Central Synagogue Beth Emeth. Hi, Elliot. We have rented and are currently renting a considerable amount of our space, some classrooms to the local school district. We are renting our catering hall, or, you know, the Khan Auditorium, to a church on Sunday. We rent to Hadassah an office. We used to rent to Montessori schools, but they went out of business. So, you know, we're always looking for tenants. A lot of these tenants appear, you know, the church came in one day and said, "Hey, we're getting kicked out of our place. We're looking for something like, you know, like a synagogue or another church." And it kind of worked out. I mean, we're just in, you know, they've been there for a week, 2 weeks, and so far so good. With the school, you know, their own neighbor. So a lot of these, and then, you know, Beth Emeth rented from us from prior to the consolidation, and they, you know, and then we eventually consolidated. So there's a lot of luck, word of mouth. You know, the way we heard about Beth Emeth was one of our congregants had heard something somehow. Elliot, I don't even remember how it all came about, but next thing you know, they were renting from Central Synagogue, and then we consolidated. So
It was a long story, Jimmy, but
it is.
the point of word of mouth is that a member of the board of Congregation Beth Emeth, the Reconstructionist congregation, was paying a shiva call, at which a member of the board of Central Synagogue of Nassau County was also paying a shiva call, and they got to talking, and then they said, "Oh, Rabbi Skidell and Rabbi Gruber, at that time we were the rabbis of each respective congregation, should get together and talk," and we did. And that led, as I always say, to cohabitation, cooperation, collaboration, and consolidation.
So
Excellent. I
the
love
moral of the story is,
that.
do not miss a shiva call.
That's
There
right.
you go.
I want to be mindful of the time, Joan, just really
Joanne
quick.
has one last question, and
Just
then I want to
wanted
wrap
to know
up.
when the recording will be available, because I'd like to share it with my executive committee. It's very relevant. Karen, as always, not surprising. You have so much information, and thank you.
We will make it available as soon as possible, hopefully by the end of the week, and if not, then by Monday, I would say.
So I
Thank
just
you.
want to wrap
Karen,
up.
last word. Yeah.
I want to thank everyone for coming on the call. The purpose of the call was to look at your real estate as another way to change, to grow, to expand, to rethink your community and your synagogue. Whether you're thinking of selling or merging or moving or renting, there's lots of options out there, and it takes a little bit of time and work. But my real belief, in my experience, given my life experience, is that this is what synagogues should be looking at now. That this is the time, as I say, this is the time before it's too late to start thinking of all the, to dedicate time and resources to think about this. And you're going to need people, patience, and planning.
Thank you. And thank you, Karen Kaladni, very much for being with us today. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Feel free to follow up with your liaison if you have questions or additional information that you're looking for. And hope to see many of you soon again on our next call and in February.
Feel free to pass out my information as well to anyone who needs it.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks. Thank
Have
you
a
very
great rest
much,
of your
Karen.
day. Bye.
Thank you.